Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Demerbox. Go to demerbox.com/dognation for $50 off while supplies last.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Georgia coach Kirby Smart held his weekly press conference yesterday. I was not there. I'm always in the studio, it seems like. But man, I wish I was, because the topic that came up yesterday is definitely one in which I find to be kind of interesting. Definitely one that has been kind of a hot button issue for us here around our program, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Demerbox. It is the subject of how does the Georgia offense get more explosive? Now, if you measure points per game and yards per game and margin of victory, for the most part, Georgia is doing pretty fine there in that regard. But there is an idea of explosiveness, maybe kind of, it's one of those things that the average fan just sort of closes his eyes and has a picture of what explosive looks like. Maybe Georgia's just below that. There's also a statistical measure that Kirby Smart uses. We'll get to his definition of this in a moment. Smart says even by that standard, Georgia just slightly below that, maybe against Tennessee. How does Georgia fix all this to the extent that it's broken? How does Georgia fix it, or how does it improve on it maybe a little bit to say it better? Kirby Smart had his ideas yesterday. We have ours as well. I'm curious to find out where you kind of come down on all of this. So let me begin with this notion. Really good question asked Kirby Smart yesterday. Kirby, a lot of points, easy win, at least by the final margin of victory. But given the entire picture of your offense, are you happy with it right now? Are you satisfied with what UGA is doing offensively? And here is what Kirby Smart said.
Am I happy with the offense? Yeah, I'm happy with what we've been able to do, sustain drives. Do we want to be more explosive? Yes, we want to be more explosive. I think we're always looking. We have a goal of one of every eight plays to be explosive. In this game, we were 1.1 out of 8.3, so we missed our goal offensively of being explosive. That's our standard. That's not, some teams may have, they want one every five, but we want one out of every eight plays is our goal, and we were 1 of 8.3. So we just missed it and weren't. And some of that, they did a good job of, and you take one or two blocks downfield and one more play's explosive and you make that goal. But we're always looking to improve, and the same thing with defense. We're trying to not give up explosives.
So Kirby defines an explosive play as a play that goes for 12 or more yards, says the ratio of those kinds of plays against Tennessee was almost where they wanted it to be, but maybe not quite. And for the average fan watching, I think maybe there was some of the same kind of thought. Now, ultimately, Jake Fromm was dazzling on Saturday in terms of delivering the football and the overall statistical performance from him. But in terms of the kind of the eye-popping stuff you see happening around college football, the fact that Kirby says Georgia was probably just south of that, the average fan probably looks in on that and kind of agrees. Maybe even more so against a better defensive team like Notre Dame the previous game 2 weeks prior, where there was definitely, I think, a consensus of feeling among fans that maybe an overall lack of explosiveness there when it comes to the offense. And it was also then later on asked to Kirby Smart of what the role that quarterback Jake Fromm plays in all of this. Because the one thing we hear about Fromm incessantly, and we have no reason to doubt that this is true, is that Fromm is amazing at reading a defense. And Fromm is also amazing at finding an open receiver. His completion percentage is like, 75% or something, like just insane right now. He's delivering the football clearly, and he's reading defenses obviously. But is he maybe choosing too many safe throws as opposed to the deeper, more substantial throws that can make the Georgia offense more explosive? And once again, Kirby Smart kind of goes into a little bit of detail here. Pretty interesting answer from Smart on Fromm's role in making the Georgia offense more explosive. Here's Kirby again.
He's taking some shots, and we've hit some. I mean, we take shots in practice. He has progressions that he reads, and he goes through his progressions, and he looks for the right throws. But being explosive is a lot of things. It's blocking downfield. It's winning one-on-ones. It's speed, vertical speed versus horizontal speed. There's a lot of things combined in that. I mean, you look at just look at us defensively in reverse and say, okay, what have we given up? Explosive. Well, two of our explosives are busts. One was against Murray. So we give up a big play in that game off of a bust, and then give up a really big explosive last week, again, off of a bust. So some of that is mistakes where he's going to capitalize on those errors if he gets those opportunities. But we haven't had a lot of busts in coverage where they left a guy free or somebody just messed up. And George, had an explosive where he won one-on-one outside. And I think that those are the ways you get an opportunity to get those explosives down the field. But it's not a matter of him not reading it correctly or us not calling it, because a lot of times the progression is deep to short or short to deep or across the board, and he does a good job of finding the right guy with the ball.
So to hear Kirby Smart there, and I think he paints probably an accurate picture, that the idea of taking what is a good offense and making it even more explosive, maybe even more dangerous for opposing defenses, the overall recipe for how you do that is probably a little bit complicated, right? I mean, as Kirby said, there's a lot that goes into reading a defense, and there's a lot that's kind of involved in that. And I think that Kirby's description of that there is probably the overall accurate assessment. So at the risk of maybe oversimplifying things too much, let me now, based on everything that Kirby Smart said, kind of offer a more simple suggestion. Now, Kirby, if he was sitting here with us right now, may say this is too simplistic. But nonetheless, I'm going to offer kind of a simple suggestion of how I think that Georgia can achieve the goal that Kirby Smart just said was a stated goal, of being more explosive offensively, finding more 12-plus yard receptions, finding more big plays down the field. I think that Georgia needs to look at the wide receivers who are providing that, or who are coming the closest to providing that, and finding a way to get them the football more. Is that too simplistic? Am I oversimplifying things too much when I say, look at the productivity of your wide receivers and determine here who it is that's most likely to give you explosive plays and find a way to make them the focal point of the offense? Let me back this up with some stats for a moment. Bill Connelly from ESPN does his advanced stats box scores from the key games each week. It's kind of a little bit deeper look at the games beyond just the regular who threw for how many yards, who had how many catches, who had how many rushing yards. It's something a little bit deeper than that. I'll try to put a link to these when I post the show at theworldfamousdognation.com later on today. But as an idea of who's kind of been the most explosive for Georgia, let me give you an example or two here from Georgia's last two games. Let me start with the Tennessee game, if you don't mind, here for a moment. Now, I'm going to give you two particular stats, and this is all, as I said, courtesy of our friend Bill Connelly over at ESPN. When it comes to success rate, which is essentially, you know, how successful the receptions are, does a third down catch turn into a first down or a touchdown? Does a second down catch, you know, gain 70% of the yards needed towards a conversion to a first down? Does a first down catch get half of those yards? Are you getting 5 yards on first down, 7 yards on second down? Are you moving the chains on third and fourth down? That's essentially what success rate is. And then yards per target, which is the other thing that you're going to see here on your screen for those of you watching on video, is simply the number of receiving yards you get per times you're targeted during the game. Not yards per reception, but yards per target. So obviously, if you don't catch the football, that goes down as a zero. So let me show you four receivers from the Tennessee game. Lawrence Cager, success rate 83%. Yards per target 9.7. Not quite explosive on the average, but not so bad. Demetrius Robertson against Tennessee, success rate 100%. Yards per target, 30.5. Now, that's kind of an outsized number because Robertson had the one really huge catch, but that counts, and it certainly fits into the average here. George Pickens, success rate, 75% against Tennessee. Yards per target, 5.8. His touchdown is a relatively short catch. So that's going to lower that number just a little bit. And then Tyler Simmons, the other wide receiver to get involved against Tennessee, success rate 25%, yards per target 6.5. So if I'm looking at this right here, I'm saying, okay, so the two receivers coming the closest to giving Georgia an explosive offense right now are Lawrence Cager and Demetrius Robertson. And I'm thinking, maybe oversimplified here, but I'm thinking nonetheless, well, if I want the Georgia offense to be more explosive, I've got to find a way to make sure Cager and Robertson remain a big part of this. Now let's go to the Notre Dame game here for a moment, and let's see if that same thought runs consistently here for a moment. Here are those same kind of stats against Notre Dame. Georgia's last game, also Power 5 competition. Success rate, yards per target. Cager's success rate against the Irish, 100%. Yards per target, 16.4. Robertson's success rate against Notre Dame, 80%. Yards per target, 9.6. Dominic Blaylock, who was involved against Notre Dame, not so much against Tennessee, had a success rate of 33% and 6.3 yards per target. And then once again, Tyler Simmons, 50% success rate, yards per target, 4.5. I mean, I realize that two games is kind of a small sample size, and yet I don't know that Georgia fans would disagree with the data set produced by that small sample. It seems like right now that Cager and Robertson are your two most likely explosive receivers, and it seems like you've got a chance to find one of those when it comes to Blaylock, when it comes to Pickens, but they haven't quite emerged yet. So if you're Georgia against South Carolina on Saturday, if you're Kentucky the following week, and you better believe the Florida Gators once the month of November begins, if you're looking for more explosive offense, To me, it means finding a way to make Robertson and Cager a bigger part of this and figure out what you got going on with these freshmen, Blaylock and Pickens a little bit there as well, which does kind of dovetail nicely into something that Georgia offensive coordinator James Coley has told us before, that when it comes to finding the guys who maximize your potential for success, as Coley said before, that's supposed to be how the Georgia offense is designed. Here is how the Georgia offensive coordinator said that before the season began.
I think in the pro-style game, you coordinate to your players. Players, not plays, right? It's a little cliche in the coaching profession, but it's the truth. Coach Smart is all about players and not plays. He definitely preaches that to us. And sometimes as coaches, you forget and you're like, man, this scheme is really intriguing, but are your players touching the ball within this scheme? I think that the philosophy that we have here at Georgia is that who's touching the ball and are they the guys that are going to give us the biggest impact?
I mean, I think that's said perfectly by Coley there. Who's touching the ball and are they the guys who are going to get us the biggest impact? Right now, to me, it seems like if you want explosive offense, you got to involve Cager, you got to involve Robertson, you got to figure out these freshmen. At that point in time, I'm not quite so sure that other receivers getting those same touches are going to have the same reasonable outcome for explosiveness. And to me, that's the kind of thing that James Coley's got to be paying attention to. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by DemerBox, and we're glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. And as I said before, it's great to have DemerBox as a part of our program, and I want to make sure for those of you who are maybe checking in on us today that you know that DemerBox has got a great offer for you. Now, if you're saying, well, what is a DemerBox? You watch on video, you can see this for yourself. It's kind of like this Pelican carrying case, indestructible tailgate thing here. You know, you can put your wallet in here, all your valuables. You can also, it's waterproof, so, you know, if you're out in the rain and for a tailgate, if you're floating down the Chattahoochee River or whatever, it's going to protect all your stuff. It's got a Bluetooth speaker in the front. This thing works from 100 feet away. You can connect a lot of these things together. The DemerBox is really the ultimate tailgate apparatus, and it's really fun to have these as part of our show here on DogNation.com. So many of you have taken advantage of the offer also that I'm about to tell you about, but a few more people need to know that there is still a chance for you to get in while supplies last. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to DemerBox.com/DogNation to order your DemerBox. Now, when you go to DemerBox.com/DogNation and you use the promo code DogNation, you can get $50 off your order while supplies last. We're going to take that up to 100 orders here. So jump in there and get going on that. DemerBox.com/DogNation, promo code DogNation. Get big savings on the ultimate tailgate thing here, this DemerBox. Protect all your stuff. Enjoy the Bluetooth speaker. And no matter what you're doing outdoors, DemerBox is a great thing for you to take with you. We're going to get Jeff Sintel here coming up in just a moment as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. A lot of recruiting stuff to talk about with Jeff. One more thing from Kirby Smart before we get there, though. Thought Smart yesterday had a pretty interesting challenge to you, UGA fans. The unbelievable atmosphere at night for Notre Dame, a time that none of us will ever forget being there at Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium, the incredible atmosphere that was created by the fans and the lights and everything else. Well, Saturday is maybe a little bit of a tougher sell. Noon against South Carolina. Vegas has Georgia as a huge favorite. Kirby Smart says this is no time for Dogs fans to sleep in. Here was the challenge that he gave to Dog Nation when he spoke to reporters yesterday.
Been an exciting game. I want to challenge our fans who have always responded to challenges to get in your seats early and get ready for an early kickoff. Our guys will need that support, and we'll need the crowd noise and the impact we had in the Notre Dame game. We'll need that same thing going against a young quarterback.
There is something to me really funny about the challenge that Smart issues here, and I don't know if you noticed this as well, but Kirby says, you know, every time we've challenged Georgia fans, they've always been equal to that task. It's like, hey, we need 40,000 of you to go to South Bend, Indiana. Coach, we're there for you. We'll do whatever you need. Hey, we got to have you on the road here for Tennessee. Not only will we be there, we're going to try to checkerboard the whole stadium. We're going to have coordinated red and black. We'll take over Nashville. We'll, you know, go to the tunes of tens upon tens of thousands to Pasadena, California. It seems like there's no ask that's too big for Georgia fans. They live up to the challenge every single time. Unless it means waking up just a little bit earlier for a home game in Athens. All of a sudden, that's like the bridge too far. I think that's kind of funny, and I think we all know the truth here. When you take away the tailgating opportunity, and when you, especially for those who are kind of driving into Athens, which is most of the crowd, it becomes a little bit more challenging. So it's kind of funny to say, hey, we had 30,000 of you, or however many it was, in Knoxville last week. Now we just need a few of you to be willing to wake up and be in your seats in time for a noon kickoff against South Carolina. I guess some questions, some requests are a little bit more difficult than others, but my guess is you'll see a spirited group there for the dog walk, which is 9:45 on Saturday, and then for the kickoff against South Carolina at noon. So we'll obviously talk a lot more about that throughout the rest of the week. For now, by the way, later on today, we will get more of Kirby Smart. I thought pretty good news on the Jordan Davis front. We'll hear from him on that. But for now, here on this Dog Nation Daily presented by DemerBox, a lot of recruiting news you want to know more about, including a big UGA target taking a visit to one of the Dog's most hated rivals. We'll talk about all of that next with Jeff Sintel as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Great to have you with us.
Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Great to have Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update, and there is a lot of recruiting stuff I want to get into with Mr. Sintel after spending a little time with him and our buddy Connor Riley in Knoxville over the weekend. Good to be back here getting ready for a home game on Saturday. And I guess, Jeff, before I kind of dive into the recruiting news of the day, let me just first of all say good morning. Thanks for being with us as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Hope you're doing well.
Hey, Brandon. Good morning, BA. But there must have been something wrong with this connection for me, because I heard you say one of Georgia's most hated rivals. Or are you being frivolous this morning or something? Or has someone else moved into that category of the most hated rivals?
No, I guess I was playing to the theatrics of keeping people guessing of who I might be talking about. But no, if I'm going to say it accurately, the most hated rival for the people on this show, our buddy Eddie here on the set, myself as well. So let's just get right there. Florida played host to five-star tight end Darnell Washington on Saturday. Washington got to see a Gators win in Gainesville over Auburn. Certainly Florida fans are over the moon about the performance. Do you think the visit had any impact on Washington whatsoever?
Well, you know, I think the reports trickling out about Darnell is that he liked the atmosphere. First of all, before we get started, can we just put ourselves in the place of Darnell Washington for a second? Because the first two college football games he has ever been to is Georgia-Notre Dame and then Florida-Auburn. I mean, that's kind of like your first two dates of your single life being something like Charlize Theron and Halle Berry or whatever you want to call it. You know, Blake Lively. This young man has these two games as his benchmark for all other college football games, period.
Yeah, but I think about it a little bit differently, though, Jeff. This is a guy that's from Las Vegas. Now, people think of Las Vegas as a casino town, but it's really a lot more than that. There are world-class restaurants, Bobby Flay, and, you know, all the, you know, the great chefs have their own restaurants out there. Unbelievable nightlife city. I realize Darnell's too young to take advantage of that, but, you know, Las Vegas is a world-class city. Can you imagine going from Las Vegas to Gainesville, Florida? It'd be like, you know, falling out of the penthouse into a hog trough. I mean, that's a pretty big drop in terms of where you live to where you visit.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, I just can't get over the fact that these are the first two college football games he's ever been a part of, and he's a college football recruit. And
sure.
Obviously, the news coming out of his visit is he saw Kyle Pitts. He saw how Florida had a lot of 12 personnel, how they put multiple tight ends on the field. And Kyle Pitts, who's really tight and really good friends with DeAndre Swift and Mark Webb Jr., was the featured tight end of that offense. And he saw him get a lot of work in that game against the Auburn Tigers. So Florida did actually show a couple of things he wanted to see.
Well, along those lines, to kind of follow up on that, you know, Kirby, and I talked about this a lot before you joined us on the show today, you know, Kirby talked a lot about Georgia's attempt to be more explosive on offense. I know I've asked you some version of this question a gazillion times, but it seems appropriate to ask you this now with Washington being where he was on Saturday and Kirby saying what he did on Monday. If you're a guy like a Washington or some of these other very intriguing offensive prospects that Georgia's reaching out to for the class of 2020 and beyond, I mean, how much does an efficient yet maybe not always explosive Georgia offense, how much does that work against them, and how much fertile soil is there for negative recruiting when Georgia's kind of doing what it's doing? Scoring plenty of points, winning plenty of games, but not necessarily making superstars out of anybody.
Yeah, but see, Brandon, I think Georgia has a I don't know whether I would call it a cover or I would call it an explainer for what's going on there when they make the pitch to these guys by saying, we don't have tight ends like you in this offense. We have guys that are great blocking tight ends, but we need guys that can do both of these things for us to function at the highest level of the offense. And I don't think you have to be the world's greatest salesman in order to deliver that pitch, because clearly Georgia, much like every other team in college football, doesn't have a tight end like a Darnell Washington, like a Theo Johnson, like an Arik Gilbert. So there is some merit. There's some legs to that a little bit. I think the interesting thing for Darnell is, I think if we follow his official visit pattern, he's got Georgia out of the way, he's got Florida out of the way. I know he's probably definitely going to stick to that Alabama plan to see Alabama LSU. That's going to be probably the biggest recruiting weekend left in the South, in the Southeastern Conference, at least this year. But then he's trying to figure out, does he want to go see Miami? Does he want to go see Tennessee? Does he want to go see LSU? Does he want to go see Penn State? Remember, he's the guy that had the soft top three and then a pronounced top five, where he included two other schools in there. It's going to be interesting to see, especially if a Tennessee loses to Mississippi State this weekend and falls to, I believe, 1-5 or 1-6, whether Tennessee actually even gets a visit at all from Darnell Washington.
I mean, before we move off the subject, I'll give you my opinion. I'll let you tell me if I'm right or wrong. Over the last couple of years, Florida has ended up feeding a lot of meals to a lot of players who ended up playing for Georgia. I'm assuming they showed a good time to run another dog on Saturday, and the money they spend on Washington's official visit will end up, you know, kind of going into the to the wasted file, if I had to assume. Am I being too ambitious or too overconfident if I say that?
Well, I mean, you got to remember, what has Florida done since then? Because, Brandon, you remember that top three. You remember that extended five. Florida wasn't even in there. I think Florida's trying to get into the race there with Darnell Washington, and I think that's his second visit to Gainesville, if I do recall correctly. He also saw them in the spring, but there are other schools that have been much deeper into this thing with Darnell Washington than the Gators.
Sure.
Interesting that it was a last-minute scheduled official as well. I believe it had something to do with the Gators' momentum so far this evening.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. It's a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with Jeff Sintel. I got more questions coming for him. Let me also remind you, speaking of Marlowe's, we've got a big event coming up two Thursdays from now as Marlowe's hits the road again and returns. And I'm really excited about being back here again. The Marlowe's in Dunwoody for our Marlowe's matchup before Georgia takes on Kentucky. It begins that night at 6 p.m. It's 1317 Dunwoody Village Parkway. They're in the Dunwoody location. This is an unbelievable spot for us and a great time for me and our buddy John Stinchcomb, the former Georgia All-American, to talk some Georgia football with you. We had an enormous crowd for our event at Peachtree Corners a couple of weeks ago, and I'm looking forward to being a part of a big crowd again. That's Thursday, October 17th, 6 p.m. The Marlowe's in Dunwoody, of course, will be out in the patio for that. And right now, it's patio season at Marlowe's. This fall weather gets me thinking about craft cocktails and chef-inspired food and great-looking folks that hang out at the tavern close to you right there in your neighborhood. So be with us on October 17th, but really be with us or you know, find a Marlowe's at any point in time to kind of enjoy what is a great, great season. Marlowe's famous for its hospitality, and they really roll out the red carpet during the autumn. So I hope you will check that out. Jeff, let me talk about another piece of recruiting news for a player that we've talked about a pretty good bit, but I don't know that it's ever gotten all that serious for us in terms of thinking about this guy ending up at Georgia. That's Jacoby Cowan, the defensive lineman. He commits to Ohio State. You know, I don't know that the recruiting world is necessarily caught off guard by that all this much, but it is a name off the board that we've at least mentioned as a possibility for Georgia. So it seems like with Cowan now in Columbus, it seems like a pretty good time to kind of springboard this into where the current state of the Georgia defensive line recruitment is. Florida's playing better. Maybe that moves Jervon Dexter a little closer to them. Keeps Akevious Walker alive. Obviously, Jordan Birch was the guy that Kirby Smart made sure to visit during the off week. So Cowan's off the board. I guess reset things when it comes to the defensive line situation for right now.
Yeah, so Cowan was the guy that probably drifted away from Georgia over the summer, especially. We know how this race ended up. Cowan went to go visit Ohio State in late July, mid-July. He gave his commitment to the Buckeyes at that time and kept it silent until last Friday. Georgia finished second in that race, and that was a Trey Scott relationship that dated back to when Jacoby Cowan was in the eighth grade. You see Florida, you know, basically thinking they're going to lift up a lot of trophies and flags this year. That's definitely encouraging to them holding on to Jervon Dexter. I think it kind of makes the defensive line what it is. It's when these things start happening, the chances of Georgia retaining its current defensive line group and then maybe going after two final names like Kentavious Walker and then also Jordan Birch, I think those realities become much clearer as, you know, Cowan drifts away. And let's be frank, he wasn't really a guy that had seemed on his way to Georgia ever since maybe late July, early August. I thought it was pretty telling when he didn't make it to Georgia for the late cookout event when all the other big names were in there. Obviously, that's after he just showed up to Georgia for the scavenger hunt as well in late May. So I would say that Cowan was definitely in the rear view for some time. I don't even think we had him on our last few weeks' worth of Hedges top tens or the Athens phone book listing, as you like to call it, and the also considering or also don't forget these names portion of that feature on the program. So it really seems like Kentavious Walker is a guy to think about very hard there. Kentavious won't even take his official visit to Georgia until December. Mr. Dexter is a name that is definitely a talented target. And now it seems a lot more likely that the defensive line position becomes a lot more clear. As much as I know, Brennan, you would love to see more drama in this recruiting cycle, like the return of Justin Rogers to the defensive line options or something like that.
I imagine the fact that the Georgia defensive line, at least to my mind, seems to be playing pretty well right now. They're not sacking the quarterback, you know, overall as much as maybe some people would want it. But in terms of stopping the run and getting a lot of guys rotating and playing, this group seems to be an upgrade over where it was in 2018. I imagine that's got to help the recruiting efforts here just a bit. I mean, it looks like some players are getting developed along that defensive line at the moment.
Yeah, the one thing I would add to that is it seems like Georgia, when you have short-term futures and long-term futures, you see – what's happening with Trayvon Walker, you see what's happening with Devontae Wyatt, you see what's happening with Jordan Davis, the ankle injury, foot injury notwithstanding. You see Georgia having a lot of good young depth. They definitely need it considering there's eight names off that defensive line that will be gone in the next 2 years. And I think that's really where Georgia's at right now. The other thing to think about there is the incoming class. And Warren Brinson is playing his Nike socks off, man, or let me say Under Armour socks, since that's IMG is an Under Armour school. But he's really, when those rankings come out, I expect his name to go up a little bit because he's having a fine senior season, playing very well for the Ascenders. And you see Jalen Carter still a big part of that class. You've got Nazir Stackhouse also in there for the defensive line group at Georgia, especially after Georgia suffered the decommitment or saw the decommitment of Jameel Burrows. I think defensive line is a spot, considering Brinson stock up, considering that, you know, Kentavious Walker has gone from an outside linebacker to a defensive end, maybe even an inside guy, 270 pounds now. I think what Georgia's got cooking on the defensive line front still looks pretty good at this time.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well said. I want to ask you more about some of these freshmen in a moment before we close things out. Let me squeeze in one more kind of off-the-wall question before we get there, though. You know, Kirby Smart talked yesterday about how impressed he's been with Ryan Helinski and how hard Georgia recruited him, the quarterback, and you know, Helinski was one of those fast risers on the recruiting circuit a year ago, and a player that for a while I really did hope that Georgia would have gotten and would have probably still liked to have seen Georgia got Helinski. It's not a surprise to me to see him doing well for the Gamecocks. But when you factor that in with what John Rhys Plumlee is also doing at Ole Miss, who really, I mean, he's this is beyond just, hey, a nice little spark here for a bit, you know, in absence of Matt Corral. This is a guy who's kind of taking control of that Ole Miss offense. They were pretty impressive against Vanderbilt on Saturday. It does kind of lead to a pretty interesting what-if scenario, right? And I reckon if you really land one of those quarterbacks for 2019, and part of this is just bad luck for Georgia because of Dwan Mathis's illness, you can't do anything to play defense against that. And those things are just going to happen in life sometimes. But if you think about, you know, if a John Rhys Plumlee's at Georgia right now or Ryan Helinski's at Georgia right now, that's a pretty interesting quarterback progression. And all of a sudden, if Fromm is going to the NFL after the 2019 season, then we're having a very different conversation about who the likely starter could be for 2020, are we not?
Yeah. I mean, I would put Helinski, Brandon, up there with Jake Fromm in terms of the high school prospects that I've seen that were ready to come in right away, absorb the mental part of the game, make the accurate throws, make the right decisions under duress. Helinski was that type of a prospect. And what do we say all the time here on this program, Brandon? The misses that you have in recruiting beef up your stock for the bigger guns in years to follow. And to me, it seems pretty obvious in my mind that if Georgia would have signed Ryan Helinski, then the thoughts of Carson Beck, the thoughts of Caleb Williams, and those were going to be pretty hard to pull off. remember, Brandon, Georgia was a clear top three school for Ryan Helinski. And really what it came down to when he decided, I believe he decided in the spring of his junior season, junior year of high school, and he was looking at Georgia still, and he was looking at Georgia thinking, Jake Fromm, Justin Fields. He knew he wanted to play in the SEC, knew he wanted to play in a big-time conference in that southern part of the country with the climate, and everybody just really digs and understands football. But then you looked over at South Carolina, and there was only Dakirion Joyner and Jake Bentley there that he would have to vie with. And let's face it, South Carolina went hard from Ryan Helinski from the start. I remember one of his unofficial visits. He's walking around the streets of Columbia. They were giving him major attention from the head coach and the offensive coordinator. And Helinski just felt like he could be the guy at South Carolina. And he had great unofficial visits and just felt connected to South Carolina. But he also, one of the things I remember from that recruiting story, Brandon, is he said he wouldn't mind at all waiting behind a guy like Fields and waiting behind a guy like Fromm, because those two guys would show him the way and what it took to be a successful quarterback in the SEC. But Georgia was really in that thing at one time, but it seems funny to think about it now because of the scholarship debt that the Bulldogs do not have. That's what they had when Helinski was making his choices, and at that time they had both Jake Fromm and Justin Fields on the roster.
Let me do one quick thing before we let you go. I liked your freshman report from early this week, kind of looking back at the game against Tennessee on Saturday. I wanted to kind of follow up on that, and I want to tell you my thought on something. I want you to tell me if you think it's true or untrue. Through five games now and 6 weeks of the season for Georgia, I would say that right now, in terms of freshman impact, Trayvon Walker's probably playing a little bit more and maybe a little bit better than I assumed that he would. I just think the defensive line's a pretty tough position for a freshman to play, but Walker is a really special player, apparently, and his impact has been greater than I probably thought it would be. Conversely, I would say that Nolan Smith's impact on Georgia up till now, just given the hype that surrounded him coming in, maybe his impact's been a little less than I would have thought it would be. He's on the field plenty and maybe just close to having some breakout performances and some big-time breakout plays, but maybe a little bit less of an impact than I thought we would have gotten from Nolan through five games. Is that a fair statement in your mind?
Well, it's kind of muddy water. Brandon and I do this thing called the heat check, where I kind of look at the players at Georgia that are doing things that are freshmen or redshirt freshmen that are doing things to help the team's overall bottom line. And when it comes to the cases of, first of all, I'm a little bit surprised that Tyreek Stevenson or N'Kobe Dean haven't cracked that. I think that goes six names deep now most weeks. I'm a little surprised that those guys are just kind of hanging around there. But in the case of Nolan and Trayvon specifically, those guys to me are in the game. They're getting early first quarter contested game reps. Basically, they're the starters now in the nickel package when Georgia goes nickel or dime on third down. They're in the game, and they're getting the reps. They're just not making the plays yet. It seems like Trayvon, he had a sack, almost a sack on Saturday night that he just couldn't get his arms around Maurer. And then Aziz Ojulari of the Wolfpack came and, gobbles that guy up and takes him down. And it seems like Nolan's first couple of games off a little bit more flashes than the last few. Now, he's in there. He's around the pocket. He's one of the most encouraging teammates you'll find on the Georgia roster. But those guys are kind of – I think the benchmark for them is, are they playing? Are they getting those contested reps? Do you see them at least harassing the pocket, getting in on it, getting in on the action, and staying in the game, doing the right things? That's what they're doing right now. Whether they're relatively anonymous or not making those flashes that a guy like Dominic Blaylock or Aziz Ojulari or George Pickens can do a lot easier, given that the nature of the positions for the offensive guys are touches. It's interesting to me that those guys they continue to be on the field and they continue to show promise. They're just not getting their names on the tackle and the stat sheet yet, as others are. And the thing with the Georgia defense, you got to realize, is there are guys like Justin Young, Michael Barnett. Aziz has been in the program for 2 years. Those are guys, and Brandon, you can all go ahead and lump Jermaine Johnson in much the same manner. He's not a freshman, but he's a 2019 signee. And it's almost like they look athletic, they're running around, they're active, they're encouraging, they're full of energy. You see the athleticism. They're just not getting those exclamation point plays yet. But to me, the bottom line is the fact that they're in there, they're contributing, and they're staying in there. bodes well for how the coaching staff feels about all of them.
Yeah, it seems to me that some of the snaps that Jermaine Johnson were getting early in the year, some of that's going towards Adam Anderson now, which is obviously another pretty impressive player. Let me do really quickly here about 30 seconds worth on the offensive side of the ball. I also talked a lot before you joined us about the need to just be more explosive and targeting the receivers who've been explosive for you. And for me, that's Cager and that's Robertson right now. There's also room for a freshman to be a part of that conversation as well. Is it more likely to be Blaylock or is it more likely to be Pickens based on what you've seen through four games, or I should say five games?
It's probably more likely to be Pickens because you see Georgia, there's the confidence from folks I know that are at practice. They tell me basically every jump ball situation or deep ball is fade ball, back shoulder type thing. Pickens is winning those the majority of the time, even against Georgia's elite corners. He just knows how to go up and get a ball underneath contested coverage. So I think Pickens is the guy that I think will be easier to make those explosive chunk plays down the field. If you look at a lot of George Pickens' highlight tapes, though, in high school, he's able to make those plays down the field on, like, post routes, crossing routes, kind of like seam routes, crossers across the field to beat a certain type of coverage. I think that one is the guy that you see more likely, unless Dominic's going to become a more electric threat in the punt return game. You know, that topic to me, Brandon, maybe sparks a comment for you to discuss and chew on for the rest of your show. If you had to look at the most underutilized Bulldogs so far this season, I've got a name for you. I think the name that might come to my mind, and again, this is picking a nit with a strong contending top three team, but one of the most underutilized Bulldogs to me so far, to me, it feels like would be a guy like James Cook.
Yeah.
It would also feel to me to be a guy like Demetrius Robertson. Those are the two guys to me that there's still a lot more plays left in the bag for both of those guys, I feel, in 2019.
Yeah, Jeff, I think that's really well said. Thanks so much for being a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update today. And as I said before, this is a great time to get to Marlowe's, especially if you want to sneak off, have a date night. I think those of us who are married, sometimes we say we don't do that kind of stuff enough. Well, if you want to really have a special night with your significant other, go curl up in a booth there at Marlowe's Tavern. Enjoy a great dinner and get yourself a little dessert, a little creme brulee, something like that. Honestly, there's really, no better place for a great, fun date night than with our friends right there at Marlowe's Tavern. And so check out the tavern right there in your neighborhood, and I think that you'll have a really good time doing that. Jeff, thanks for being with us. I'll see you tomorrow. It's Before the Edges, presented by Kroger. Look forward to a little bit more recruiting talk with you then, and I'm sure we'll have you back here on Dog Nation Daily again very soon as well.
Hey, Brandon, pretty well said there on the pitch, man. Good time just about every time at Marlowe's Tavern, man. I would agree with you there, sir.
All right, we'll talk to you soon, Jeff.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I think that Jeff brings a pretty good point there at the end that there are a couple of guys for Georgia who you might start to say are maybe a little bit more underutilized compared to, maybe what you hoped they'd be after the beginning of the season. I think one of those may be a guy a little bit like James Cook, who at one point in time it seemed like there was great excitement for what he might be able to do. And thus far, recently anyway, Georgia getting him involved, there hasn't been quite as much of that. So we'll see. We'll continue to monitor that and kind of see how that goes as we kind of roll through the rest of the season. So our SEC Through. Before I get to some interesting SEC Through stories, let me also tell you about our friends at the UGA Alumni Association. And so many of you who are proud to call yourself UGA alumni, you show your pride by also supporting the university. We've kind of talked before about giving money, and that's obviously an important thing in terms of making sure that Georgia continues to be the strong institution that it's been in the past. But there's also something else you can do to really help the next generation of UGA students, the next generation of UGA as an institution. That's giving of your time and becoming a mentor. The UGA Mentor Program provides a convenient way for you to invest in the next generation of the future of the Bulldogs here. And you can kind of do that no matter what your schedule is and kind of no matter where you are. They make this really convenient for you. So 75% of the top executives in the United States of America have said that mentoring was important to them to get them where they are. So the impact you make in UGA students gives them a chance to one day be able to tell the same story and also be able to tell a favorable story about the impact that UGA made on them. And I know that matters to you. It's only a small commitment. Just 1 or 2 hours a month will get you into a UGA mentor program and give you a chance to pour into the next generation of UGA graduates. So the website to go to is this. It's mentor.uga.edu. Website, once again, mentor.uga.edu, and you can find out how you can become a mentor to the next generation of UGA grads. What a really cool program. All right, SEC Through here for a moment. So I told you yesterday that Florida coach Dan Mullen was criticized for what he said about Marlon Davidson at the half after Davidson had had a hit on Kyle Trask. Now, the hit left Trask injured, but almost no one connected to Auburn, and really most of the neutral observers, almost no one felt like the hit by Davidson was dirty. Mullen said it was during the halftime interview. Asked about that yesterday during his weekly press conference, Mullen kind of walked back the idea that the hit was dirty, essentially insinuating that his emotions had maybe gotten the best of him during that halftime interview, or maybe he just said something simply that he shouldn't have said. He mischaracterized that in the halftime interview, saying yesterday that he didn't think that Davidson had been coached that way. I think if you're Mullen, you got to be really, really careful what you say during a halftime interview. And I know that come across as a guy that doesn't like Florida or Dan Mullen. I totally get that. But on this point, I just believe this is objectively true. When you go on national television and call a hit dirty, you've leveled a pretty strong accusation at the player. And, you know, the later on, the oops, my bad, I guess it wasn't dirty after all. I'm not quite so sure how that sits with me necessarily. It's not an egregious error on Mullen's part, but it's certainly kind of an undue level of criticism for Davidson, who's just trying to play the game. And nobody likes to see quarterbacks get hurt. But in Davidson's case, you know, the idea that he somehow was being vicious or vindictive or intentional in his intent to harm, that's a pretty big leap on Mullen's part. I think he knows that. And unfortunately, those words can't go back and be undone at this point in time. A lot of people have also kind of criticized me. I shouldn't say criticized. I've heard from some people who are like, hey, B.A., speaking of walking back lines, ready to walk back some of the things you've said about Florida. And I said yesterday, if you're a Georgia fan, if you're scared of Florida, you should just say so right now. If beating Auburn in a rock fight makes you afraid for the cocktail party, then by all means, you should just admit so. Because speaking on behalf of at least the fans that I talk to on a regular basis, I didn't see anything from Florida in its win over Auburn that should make Georgia scared, at least as of yet. But in terms of giving Florida credit for the win, I'll do that. I said yesterday that Auburn had more at stake and would have earned more praise from winning on the road than Florida will from winning at home. But nonetheless, it was a hard-fought win. Florida went out there and got it. I think you got to give them a little bit of credit for that, all things being equal. However, what you also see here in the aftermath of the win against Auburn, heading to LSU on Saturday, is the issue here is not me not giving Florida enough credit. It still seems like the national folks, maybe the betting public in particular, not exactly believing Florida too much, even after Florida got something of a signature win against Auburn on Saturday. I was very surprised to see that Florida is a 13-point underdog, at least the opening line for the beginning of the week, 13-point underdog at LSU on Saturday. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised about that, but I would have expected to be a little bit lower. But Vegas and the betting public still liking LSU a pretty good bit there. Conversely, BetOnline, which republished playoff numbers, you know, odds to make the playoff after the weekend's games, they still have Florida 20-1 to make the playoff. By comparison, Alabama's 2.5-1. LSU and Georgia are both 7-1. So at least in terms of a lot of the betting public, even though Georgia and LSU, or I should say Georgia and Florida, are both undefeated, the betting public still sees a pretty big gap between Georgia and Florida. And the idea that I know that Pat Forty from Yahoo suggested it might be a pick'em between Georgia and Florida when they play in November, that is not what the current betting market holds. Now, we'll see how things change in the next couple of weeks, and betting lines don't necessarily begat wins on the field, but 40 could not be more wrong about that. Westgate had this as a 10-point Georgia edge as recently as last week. By the way, two more really quick stories to get to here for a moment. LSU-Florida is the big SEC game on Saturday. LSU could be getting some injury help back. Linebacker Michael Divinity could be back. Sounds like he might be. The defensive lineman Rashard Lawrence, the offensive lineman Sadiq Charles, all those guys LSU is hoping to get back on Saturday. So if a program that's been a little bit banged up, especially along the lines of scrimmage to begin the season, they may get a little help for Florida on Saturday. And then let me do one more final SEC through story. This is not news, but it's opinion. I thought it was kind of interesting. So there's an Auburn writer. His name is Brandon Marcello, and he goes on the Feinbaum show yesterday. And he said something that kind of caused me to raise an eyebrow. He said that right now around Auburn, if you're not – I hope I'm – not, you know, mischaracterizing the statement, but he essentially said, if you're not one of the top two teams in the SEC West, it seems like your season's over like halfway through the year. And all I saw was like a short clip. Feinbaum tweeted this out, so I didn't see the full interview. But if that really is reflective of how a lot of people feel at Auburn right now, I think that's a misstatement, I believe. Now, I don't expect Auburn to beat Alabama. I don't expect Auburn to beat LSU. But there is still a pretty interesting round robin to come in this SEC West. And I guess the chances, given the fact that Auburn plays Alabama at home, given the fact they have a really good defense, the chance of Auburn still being heard from the SEC West, I think that's pretty significant. I don't think you wave the white flag on Auburn season just because it lost to a Florida on Saturday. I think when you go on the road in a tough environment, there's an expectation that you're going to lose every now and then. Auburn did. The offense looks terrible, of course, with the freshman quarterback. But it wasn't such a bad performance that I think Auburn's now excluded from competing with anybody again for the rest of the year. So if Auburn fans have already waved the white flag, I think that's kind of a mistake. Defensively, home field advantage, once those things become a factor for Auburn again, I actually still think Auburn has a chance to win games. And as bad as the offense looked against Florida on Saturday, that doesn't change my opinion. That's still a really tough trip that Georgia takes there in November. So I know Auburn lost, but I don't know that the fortunes changed all that much. But I guess we'll find out how it plays out in the future as Auburn starts to play some of these other SEC West opponents. And for now, we'll make that your SEC through. And let me turn my attention back to the Georgia Bulldogs here for a moment. And what I thought was a pretty hopeful update from Smart yesterday, following up on what he'd also said on Saturday. You know that Jordan Davis left the game with what was an ankle injury against Tennessee. Big part of the Georgia run stop. If you're watching on video, you see Davis there being tended to. Later on, he would be kind of carried off the field, not putting any weight on that ankle whatsoever. He did return to the sidelines before the game was over. And yesterday, Kirby Smart, both hopeful in terms of Davis's eventual status and also a little optimistic about how the run defense kind of played when he was not in there. Pretty interesting from Kirby. Take a listen to this.
I'll be honest, I didn't see a huge difference when he wasn't out there, because there was, I mean, the things he impacts are the run game, and we were able to control the run game pretty well. I mean, the play was in there. We actually had a run come out, so we didn't play a run right early in the game when he was in there, and we fit him a lot more right as the game went on. We think Jordan's going to be fine. He's not going to be out there today. Early on, he's going to be rehabbing when you guys are out there, but we think he's going to be fine to go, so we expect him to play.
I think that Jordan Davis represents a little bit of a weird dichotomy for Georgia. If you brought in some casual fans, now a lot of the people who listen to this show on a regular basis are not really casual fans. They're really, really plugged into UGA. They follow all the twists and turns of the program. But we all know casual fans, people that maybe don't watch every game quite as closely. They don't obsess over every detail of minutia when it comes to Georgia football. Among casual fans, Davis is not among the most famous players in this team. However, if we were to ask more plugged-in, hardcore fans, who are the players that Georgia would least want to play an extended period of time without, Davis would be pretty close to the top of that list. It's kind of a weird, as I said, contrast. Not well known by everybody who watches Georgia football, but very important to the people who know the program the most closely. So the fact that that Kirby says something fairly optimistic about Davis's status there, I think that speaks well. Georgia has been much better this year at stopping the run than it was a year ago, and you hope to see that continue as the games get more important. A healthy Jordan Davis is a big part of that. Let me also, as we get ready to wrap up our program here today, tell you about our friends at Kroger here for a moment. They've got a great deal for you. You can grab the rookie bundle for your next tailgate or viewing party at Kroger. Now, this is what it includes: chicken wings, a fresh vegetable party platter, fiesta dip party platter, bag of tortilla chips, and a mini cookie platter. It's just $69.99. That's a great deal. It serves up to 12 to 16 people. There are two ways to order. You can go in the store there at the deli and order that, or you can go to this website, yourorderonline.com. That's yourorderonline.com, and you can get that ordered right there at your local Kroger. Tomorrow on the show, I'm really excited about making a big announcement. We're going to do something really, really fun for the cocktail party coming up in the beginning of November. So y'all be here with me tomorrow. I know you've been saying, BA, what's going to be going on? How you guys going to be getting ready for Georgia, Florida? We'll tell you all about that tomorrow, so be with us there for that. And by the way, speaking of those lousy, stinking Gators, 1,074 days. That's how long since Florida's beaten Georgia. It's a Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Diemer Boxx.